We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a code of silence and it can't go on.
Hi folks, I am Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on February the 9th, 2009. For newcomers, look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com and download as many of the previous shows I've done in the past, over the years, as you wish. I try to give you shortcuts to the big picture and get us above all the small bickering at the bottom. And there's also a lot of misleading information, too, that keeps us trapped for years, sometimes in different tunnels. And that's what it is. It's a world full of tunnels of information. There are some people who are experts in particular tunnels, and it's quite good, too, when you talk to them, because they know every part of it, one particular area, and they can talk forever with details and data. But we have to get them all together to come out the tunnels and combine all this information to get the big, big picture. And I try to do that as well on these talks. So you can download as many of the previous talks I've given in the past as you wish at cuttingthroughmatrix.com. You can also support me and keep me going by buying my books, materials on the website cuttingthroughmatrix.com. Or you can donate as well, and that's also on the website is how to do that. That keeps me going. Because for all the people that listen, it's quite astonishing. There's only a dozen people, really, that contribute to any sort of regularity at all. And this is the state of the world we're in today. We're going through massive changes that have never been seen on this scale before. And, well, some people have likened it to some of the professors and the Brzezinski types and others. They've likened this change that's coming up as to the massive change that happened at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, when millions of people were simply uprooted from their homes in the country and put into the cities to work for the factories. And that was happening all over Europe pretty well at the same time in most parts. That's what it's akin to, because we're going into a new world order that's been planned for well over a century. It's actually in centuries in the making. And it's never changed its goal of what kind of world order it wants. It's run by science at the top. Actually, above them, of course, are the moneyed boys, as always. But those money boys didn't simply start off as bankers. They were part of an organization which has funded all other organizations, especially revolutionary causes, because it was all part of the big system. They had to become masters over the masters of the world, as Pike and others have said. That means you gain money by every means possible, massive amounts of wealth. And then they set up foundations and front groups, and they basically achieved their goal. In fact, they achieved their goal before we were born, in a sense, because they already had set up the United Nations to help bring in this whole system. And as Carl Quigley said, who belonged to this organization, Professor Carl Quigley, he said that the right-wingers often think it's the left-wing because it seems to have all these communistic traits, and he's quite correct on that. It's to be a really socialized, managed, planned society for the whole planet, ultimately. And even then it doesn't stop, because up to the year 2050, they want to drastically reduce the populations of the world down to what they claim is a manageable level. And then the types who will survive will simply be clone types, probably, genetically enhanced, for all the possibilities of being an individual will be removed from you. And you'll be genetically enhanced to serve your masters, who will remain wild and free, those boys at the top and their descendants. Back in a moment after this break. Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and we're cutting through the matrix. And as I say, it's quite the journey, because there's so much of it. There's so many rooms in the matrix. And some of the rooms are simply centuries and what went on in the past. And you can't understand the present or what's really happening unless you know the past. Many people today are too impatient to learn the past. They learn in bits and bytes as they rush through on the internet from site to site to site, get a little bit here, a bite there. And they're always in confusion, and they're also prey to those who lead them off astray. That's a fact. I've talked to many of them. But as I say, when you go into the past and you find out how long this has been in the planning, it's never changed, as I say. It's always to do with a socialized type of society. It's all about power and control. Not just control of people or reducing people to peasants even. It's control of the minds of the people. Every individual mind will be under total domination. Then those at the top truly can say that they are gods, because there's no opposition against them whatsoever. They will have the fate of or the authority for life or death over everyone. It's coming to that very quickly now, to do with the creeping in now by governments in official publications. I read some last week from Britain, where they're going to limit families. Now, eventually, that'll be mandatory. And China, of course, is the model state for the world with their one child per family policy. But even that won't stop, because whatever they do and put on the books in legal terms is always expanded upon, always. It's just to get it on the books, and we sit back and say, well, it's not as bad as we thought it was. It's only this. And then next year, of course, they expand it. It's like the word terrorism. It starts off supposedly with a caveman over in Afghanistan hiding out. And the next thing you know, we're all terrorists. Or we've all got the possibility, the potential to be a terrorist. So we've got to be surveyed and watched all the time. It's all a con. Everything is a con to get laws on the books. Because this is a world war, and it's a war on the entire world and everyone in it, by, again, organizations. Many of them are simply fronts. Many of the foundations themselves are fronts founded by a handful of foundations that have the real money. But it gives the appearance of hundreds and hundreds of them. And really, there are very few people in charge of this whole world scenario. There are maybe thousands upon thousands of workers for them, such as the Council on Foreign Relations, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, but really there's only a few people at the top. And there's no doubt whatsoever it's also intergenerational. You cannot get away from that fact, that intergenerational planning by a few families is carried on. And the son takes over from the father with a religious fervor, and that's the key to it. It's more than just some one-generation fanatical crazy idea that someone's got. This is intergenerational. You can't pass on that kind of fanaticism unless it's a religion of a sort. That's where you see it. That's where you see people who never retire, because they still have that fire, as they call it, at the top. And we can even go back into the French Revolution to see some traits of what's coming up in the future here and across the world. Because the French Revolution wasn't just about a middle-class uprising. It wasn't just about the fact that Freemasons basically were leading the charge, at least in the early days of it. And the way they set up their parliament system with their council of elders, their mountain, they called it, after the pyramid, of course. But it was also to do with the depopulation programs that they carried out in the rural areas across France at that time, where they loaded people on boats in rivers and around the seacoast areas too, and they simply blew them up at sea or in the river and sunk them, because they said there were too many peasants living on the land. They wanted, again, this managed fixed proportion per acre. Didn't need too many people. And here we are today with the United Nations Department of Population, which is population control, of course, coming to the forefront, as it was deemed to be, because many people, including Aldous Huxley and Julian Huxley, who worked for them, for UNESCO, talked about it as coming to its prominent place. It was predestined to come to, and there's articles in mainstream media to do with the necessity of drastically reducing the populations. I've gone through the history in the past little while of the Council of Foreign Relations, Royal Institute for International Affairs, and many of the people who worked for them And pretty well everybody I've mentioned so far has been a member of them, including the Huxleys and all the rest of them. And once again, even with the Huxleys, we can go back to Sir Thomas Huxley, the friend of Charles Darwin, who championed the Darwinian cause for evolution. How come each one of them, right down the line, has been a fanatic for the same agenda? Absolute fanatic. Generally in families, someone says, you know, if the father works as an engineer, the son might want to do something totally different. These guys are always the same. They do exactly as their fathers and grandfathers did, the same with the banking boys. Why is that? And how can you be as ruthless as your grandfather was with the same agenda of depopulation, getting rid of the inferior types, eugenics, and breeding a special master race, as they called it, to dominate the rest? Maybe they've already done it. And there's a good possibility that's already been done, in fact. Because they were into eugenics and the gene itself long before we were told that it was even discovered. And you will get traces of that from famous people in the past who helped work on certain projects to do with genetics as far back as the early 1900s. So there's hardly a thing in this world that's really new, as I say, when you go into the revolutionary movements and what they were all about, and then you find sustainability was all part of it too. As I say, the French Revolution had that contained within it as well. The natural aristocracies, they call themselves, those who had the right to rule because of their superior intellect, and they should rule over the rest, the lessers, as it's called. That's all come about. We find too that the idea of democracy was anathema to these people. However, they used democracy to push their agenda, knowing there would never be such a thing, because they already had set up a parallel government, an institutional system that bypassed all democracy, first through the League of Nations and then ongoing down through the United Nations. And they have thousands of NGO, non-governmental organizations, that are fully funded by the foundations to push every part of their agenda forward. There is no democratic input whatsoever. The public sit back and watch these groups demanding things from the government. They're lobby groups. And the government's only too happy to oblige. Why are they too happy to oblige? Because they've already signed, and they have our whole lifetimes and long before we were born, treaty after treaty after treaty at the United Nations. And these treaties, they say in the Charter, are binding on all the countries that signed it. So a gradual depopulation up to the year 2050 is to be undertaken. And if you watch people today, they're dropping like flies. Doctors are churned out now, not knowing the past of medicine, and believing that it's quite natural for every one person out of two, or maybe every person, to die of cancer. That's how they're taught now. They didn't know that 40 years ago people were getting taught a completely different story of cancers, and some cancers are extremely rare. Maybe one in 100,000, one in 250,000 would get it. Not now. And that's essential if you want to guide the world along a certain path. You make sure the right propaganda and indoctrination is given to every generation coming out of university, and it never even dawns on them. There's a whole history leading up to their particular science that they're oblivious of, to do with facts, figures, and statistics. Therefore, they ask no questions. They just diagnose. And we have public relations and public opinion makers, which is just propaganda, as Bernays called it. At first, he was a guy who called it, altered it to public relations, but it was still propaganda. Everything is propaganda. The whole media is full of propaganda, and you don't know where the stories come from. We know, for instance, that media and Hollywood work hand in glove, and many, many movies come out long before they tell you something from the universities along the lines of science fiction that ends up being fact. That's all predictive programming. We're programmed, just like animals, to gradually accept there's something new in our surrounding areas, some new thing, some new way of being or living. And it's predictive programming. Everything really is predictive programming. That's how bad it is today. And even before we got the internet, they were talking about the coming information wars. They had already set up all the counters to information on the internet before they gave it to the public. Remember, the military-industrial complex used the internet for years all through the Cold War. They weren't going to give us all access to it so that we could do anything of any importance that would change their plans. So they have massive cyber war teams out there working to stir up trouble amongst anyone who tries to do anything. We're back with more after this break. Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix. I've also mentioned that the series of videos that you look at see how everyone really in the 20th century, at least a good part of it, was a product, really, of master manipulators at the top, those who understood the sciences of the mind and how the whole consumerist culture was given as part of a strategy, as part of a strategy. Now, of course, the same people and psychiatry in general, too, at the top, and those in marketing, and you can't really distinguish the two because they're both into the same thing, how to make people, how to motivate people to go in a certain direction, think in a certain way, or do a certain thing. That's what it's all about. And now they're taking away all the goodies and say, well, we gave you the consumerism, now we're going the opposite way, which is conserve. We conserve everything, sustainability. And the massive sort of propaganda that's been churned out, you just can't keep up with it. It's across the whole planet. It's all to do with public relations, propaganda, as I say, and education, because what they've done in the past, and the communists were very good at noting this and leaving it for us to study, was that they bypass the older people and they go right for the young. Young are very important. And Beria, who was the head of the NKVD in the early Soviet system, the Bolshevik system, at one of the world's meetings in the 30s, he talks about this very, very type of indoctrination. He says it used to take us 70 years to make major changes in society by masses of propaganda on the youth, and then they grow up to be adults and then they start to change the society in which they lived. They didn't realize they'd all been programmed to do that because the science was already known. But he says now, he says we can do it every 5 years. They can upgrade them every 5 years because we're getting children into kindergarten very early, exactly on the same lines as Lord Bertrand Russell said during his stage as a head of experimental schools in Britain. We tried all the same things out there. He said we don't have to remove the children from their parents. They always believed that they would have to do this to stop contamination of old ideas and values coming from the parents. He says that we can bypass that. The parents can take care of them economically. It helps the agenda because the parents would raise and be responsible financially for the child. But he says basically that we have their mind because we have scientific indoctrination if we can get them at the age of two. That's been accomplished pretty well across the board. So everything is propaganda or public relations, same thing. And regardless of all the media reports, we've got to question everything that's put out in front of us, and the whys. Always ask why is this put out now? Why is it put out now, for instance? Because there's always a good reason for it. Here's one to do with the Pentagon spending billions on public relations to sway world opinion. And this is from the ANP, February the 5th, 2009. It says, Washington, as it fights two wars, the Pentagon is steadily and dramatically increasing the money it spends to win what it calls the human terrain of world public opinion. World public opinion. Do you understand that means that you have no opinion of your own? If someone's going to win your opinion, that means they're going to give you your opinion. So it's going to spend billions on the human terrain of the world, public opinion. In the process, it is raising concerns of spreading propaganda at home in violation of federal law. Well, it never stopped them before, and it won't stop them now because no one's going to do anything about it. An Associated Press investigation found that over the past 5 years, the money the military spends on winning hearts and minds. You realize that's a propaganda to win your heart and mind? Does that sound, heart first sounds better than mind, doesn't it? At home and abroad, has grown by 63% to at least $4.7 billion this year, according to Department of Defense budgets and other documents. That's almost as much as it spent on body armor for troops in Iraq and Afghanistan between 2004 and 2006. This year, the Pentagon will employ 27,000 people just for recruitment, advertising, and public relations propaganda. Almost as many as a total 30,000-person workforce in the State Department. And the State Department's a whole other kettle of fish, because it was set up, really, to help bring in world government through economic trade, etc. To continue this article, it says, we have such a massive apparatus selling the military to us, and it's become hard to ask questions about whether this is too much money or if it's bloated, says Sheldon Rampton, research director for the Committee on Media and Democracy, which tracks the military's media operations. As the war has become less popular, they've felt the need to respond to that more. Yet the money spent on media and outreach still comes to only 1% of the Pentagon budget, and the military argues it is well spent on recruitment and the education of foreign and American audiences. Education, you're getting educated with propaganda of foreign and American audiences. Words can change everything. A word slipped in here that can change your whole perception, perspective on something. Military leaders say that at a time when extremist groups run websites, understand that they got the cyber wars up and going, and they were already do it before they gave us internet. Extremist groups. Now, what is an extremist group? Anyone who is counter opinions to this agenda is an extremist. If you start doing too much about it, they'll label you as a terrorist. That's why they came up with the vague term terrorism. But it says these extremist groups run websites and distribute video. Information is as important a weapon as tanks and guns. That's what they say here. And I'll be back with more of this and some more interesting information on this particular story after this break. Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix, reading an article about Pentagon and its public relations department, which is just, of course, propaganda. That's what it's all about, that's what public relations means. It says here, on an abandoned Air Force base in San Antonio, Texas, editors for the Joint Hometown News Service point proudly to a dozen clippings on a table as examples of success and getting stories into newspapers. What the readers are not told, each of these glowing stories was written by Pentagon staff. Under the free service, stories got out with authors' names, but not their titles, and do not mention Hometown News anywhere. In 2009, Hometown News plans to put out 5,400 press releases. This is what they do. But for this year coming up, this is what they plan to put out, under assumed names and so on. For propaganda purposes, all in advance. They plan to put out this year 5,400 press releases that we'll all pick up and prattle on about, 3,000 television releases and 1,600 radio interviews, among other work, 50% more than in 2007. The service is just a tiny piece of the Pentagon's rapidly expanding media empire, which is now bigger in size, money, and power and many media companies. In a year-long investigation, the Associated Press interviewed more than 100 people, discovered more than 100,000 pages of documents and several budgets to tally the money spent to inform, educate, and influence the public in the U.S. and abroad. The A&P included contracts found through the private Fed sources database and requests made under the Freedom of Information Act. Actual spending figures are higher because of money in classified budgets. The biggest chunk of funds, about $1.6 billion, goes into recruitment and advertising. Another $547 million goes into public affairs, which reaches American audiences. And another $489 million goes into what is known as psychological operations, which targets, it says here, foreign audiences, but it also is used at home because we're global, right? We're global. It says staffing across all these areas costs about $2.1 billion, as calculated by the number of full-time employees and the military's average cost per service member. That's double the staffing costs for 2003. So there you go. Everything is propaganda, and that's just the military. That's just the military. And again, where is your news services that accept these stories that are handed to them by the Pentagon and pop them into the press for us? Where's their integrity with their news that they're feeding the public? Because they know what it's all about. They know who's handing them these reports. But you know, every country is the same. Every country is the same. We're all kept in the dark at the bottom as they win our hearts and our minds, mind you. It's all about winning our hearts and minds. Sounds awful nice, winning your heart, isn't it? Like love, isn't it? Quite something. And this next one is to do with the upcoming agenda. We're going to see so many articles coming out at the same time about this because it reminds me of the communist system. In fact, it is the Soviet system. Remember, we've merged now with the Soviet system, the big laboratory that they had behind an iron curtain where they could do as they wanted to with millions of people, using psychology and psychiatry on the whole populations. And now we've combined the two together, as the Rees Commission found out. Same techniques are being used. Orwell talked about it too. He saw it coming. BBC News, and this is Monday the 9th of February 2009. This is, quit call over blocked green ad. A Northern Ireland minister's decision to block a government advertisement campaign on climate change has led to a call for his removal from office. Would you ever have thought that someone who challenged this would get kicked out of Parliament? It says that advertisements urge people to reduce any energy consumption and cut carbon dioxide output. But Environment Minister Sammy Wilson claimed the adverts were part of an insidious propaganda campaign. Well, he's telling the truth. But just like the Soviet Union, it was very dangerous to tell the truth, incredibly dangerous to tell the truth, because if they said that the sky was black during the day, you better parrot it was black. And everybody had to parrot it was black. So we're all part of this sustainable development thing. And so this guy's said the truth and he's going to get punished for it. Calling for his removal, the Green Party, see who started up the Green Party, by the way, because it was created from the Soviet Union for the next part of the phase. In fact, Madeleine Albright's granddad was the guy who started it up. He was a pal of Stalin. Calling for his removal, the Green Party said Mr. Wilson made a laughing stock out of Northern Ireland. So if you question it, you're bringing a laughing stock, you're creating a laughing stock at your country. Sammy Wilson urged that the Scottish executive had objected and stopped the adverts being broadcast. However, the Scottish executive told the BBC the reason it did not run these ads was because they already were running their own climate change adverts. He argued that they were giving people the impression that by turning off the standby light on their TV, they could save the world from melting glaciers and being submerged in 40 feet of water. He said that was patent nonsense. Mr. Wilson said he'd written to the UK Department of Energy and Climate Change. See, we've all got departments of it now. We used to call them weather departments. They told us what the weather was. They were generally wrong. But now it's Department of Climate Change and Energy. To say that Advertising Campaign Act and CO2 was not welcome. He explained that he did not believe in its message that man-made greenhouse gas emissions are the main cause of climate change and that the campaign was contrary to his personal views. He told the DECC, I do not wish for climate change messages to be promoted by other Whitehall departments here. But Brian Wilson of the Green Party, this is your new commissar, said the Environment Minister should be removed from office for refusing to recognize climate change. It's like Holocaust denial. They're using the same terminology and technique on people who say that there's no global warming. It's the same technique. It's meant to silence you and shame you. It should be removed from office for refusing to recognize climate change. Meanwhile, Europe's going through one of the deepest freezes it's had for years. A good part of the planet is. going through the same thing. But who are you going to believe? Mr. Brown and all these guys with sustainable developments and climate change and global warming, or your freezing feet? He's a climate change skeptic. We have got to take all measures we can do to reduce our carbon footprint. Mr. Wilson does not agree with that. This is totally incompatible with him being Minister for the Environment, he said. Friends of the Earth, another NGO funded by the big foundations, his director, John Wood, said, it's bad enough we have an environment minister who doesn't accept that human activity is driving climate change. And it's amazing, too, all the scientists have come out, haven't they? So many of them, and says that the planets themselves are going through a warming phase because of solar activity. That's hardly caused by us burning our candles here, is it? But facts got nothing to do with it. And that's what I was saying earlier. See, in the Soviet system, facts didn't matter. When they told you this is the agenda, you better snap to it and believe it. The sky during the day is always black, and at night is turquoise. Or whatever they told you, you better just believe it. And even when they changed it, never point out the fact they changed it. Just parrot the new terminology. That's how you survive in this system. Because we're living under this Sovietized socialist system. We're living under. And the U.S. is going to get all this even more so than anyone else, because Mr. Obama is going to sign everything and make this major prime responsibilities to push all this stuff through. All these treaties they've been refusing to sign, he's going to rush it all through. And guess what happens when you do that? Your prices for everything just goes skyrocketing, just like Europe. But again, the U.S. has got to be submerged into the very system that it helped to create in the first place. And that's what that's about. It's about total takeover of the whole planet and regulation of everyone's life. That's what it's about. It's interesting, too, that Mr. Brown in Britain and elsewhere are putting up more taxes on air travel. Now, people were sold on the idea in the early days of this global society, this wonderful utopia, where under the charters of the UN and the North American Free Trade Agreement and the European Charter as well, the amalgamation, we'd all have free flow of capital and labor. That's what they all say. And people think, that's great, we can go wherever we want to go. But no, that's not the plan at all. See, with all the IDing and everything else, they want to keep you in your country unless some corporation across the world needs you. Because then you're labor. And if they need you, they'll apply for all your passes to come to that country. That's what it's all about. The days of flying to where you wanted to go are about done. And Mr. Brown is putting out laws right now to curb, and he said it, to curb air travel. There will be no tourism in the future. There'll be essential passengers only. That's business, government, and that kind of thing. That's what it's all about. And that's how the Soviet Union was, again, the model state for the planet, because in the Soviet Union, you couldn't move outside your perimeters of the area you were allocated to without permission and passes. That's what's coming down here. Agenda 21 for the United Nations, it's for the agenda for the 21st century, has it in there that people will be moved gradually off the land and into the overcrowded cities. And there'll be no private transportation. There'll only be public transportation only. And there'll be no private ownership of homes either. It'll be rental only, because after all, they've got to find some way of punishing you. And they'll withdraw your credits to pay your rent, ultimately, according to Bertrand Russell. There's nothing new in this agenda. In fact, if you've been studying it for years, it's very boring, because you always know what's coming. And even get jaded with the way they introduce certain parts of it by the terms they use. It's not even fun anymore. You're still kind of jaded. You're bored, because they push it step by step forward and ahead. Quite interesting. There was a good example of predictive programming came out after the first Loyola University meeting to do, it was a world science meeting with bioethicists and the neuroscientists that deal with brain chips and so on. They've had one every year apparently since, and Newt Gingrich is the chairman who kicks it off every year. And the 2000, or the year 2000 meeting, he said that they have the brain chips ready to go. This is a scientist from Japan did. And he said they have regional computers set up that will manage everyone in an area. In other words, it will program you as to what you do that day. You could be a plumber one day and an engineer the next, or whatever. And he said the only problem that they have is to get the public to accept this, but therefore they're going to do a massive, again, PR campaign, publicity campaign, which is just propaganda again, to familiarize us with the idea of it. And they're going to spend an incredible amount of money on novels. So they go to the Future Society and they get all these novels coming out and there's brain chips in them. They said they'd even use cartoons for the children so they'd like them, they'd want these chips. This is a world science meeting. Paid for by the Department of Commerce. That's who paid for all. And they said that, and they would put it into movies and so on to get us familiar with the idea of predictive programming. And then about 6 months after that meeting, I think it was, they came out with a movie. It was called Final Cut with Robin Williams. And in Final Cut, his job is to reclaim the brain chip when a person dies. And basically go through the memory, the entire memory of each person, and take all the good bits and put the nasty bits, cut it together like a cutting room in the movies, and do the eulogy for the funeral by showing these little clips. Little Tommy at 2, little Tommy as he sees through his eyes at 5, 10 and 20 and so on. That's the idea. And it was all presented in a very nice sort of way in the movie to an extent. Now, here's a professor from Australia, and this is on, it's called 9MSN, N-I-N-E-MSN, January the 30th, 2009, by Josephine Asher. It says here, the VeriChip microchip contains identity and health information and is embedded under the skin. That's from the AAP. It says, a protest against microchip implants plan for Alzheimer's patients in Florida. It shows you some photographs of that. And it says, all Australians could be implanted with microchips for tracking and identification within the next 2 or 3 generations, a prominent academic says. He's a bit late, you see. He never dreamed. You know, professors love to get their names in the paper. They'd really love to be well known for coming up with some brand new novel idea that generally is not theirs in the first place. So, I mean, this is years after the movie Final Cut came out. He's going to tell you what was in Final Cut. More predictive programming. Michael G. Michael from the University of Wollongong School of Information Systems and Technology has coined the term ubervalence, ubervalence, to describe the emerging trend of all-encompassing surveillance. All-encompassing. They love encompassing, don't they? Ubervalence is not on the outside looking down, but on the inside looking out through a microchip that's embodied in our bodies, Dr. Michael told 9MSN. Microchips are commonly implanted into animals. And again, see, to understand, I found out, for instance, that they've been implanting animals for years, but they don't use the readers to find the dogs. If the dogs get lost, they don't bother scanning them because there's no central database. The idea for microchipping the animals was to get the humans used to the idea of it coming to us. So now that pillar has been knocked down, now they're going for us. And they're using the animals as an excuse. Well, they're doing it to your animals. What's wrong with doing it to you? That's the argument. Literally, that literally is it. Microchips are commonly implanted in the animals to reveal identification details when scanned, and similar devices have been used with Alzheimer's patients. Well, that's why they gave it to the Alzheimer's patients as well, to get us all used to getting it done. U.S. company VeriChip is already using implantable microchips which store a 16-digit unique identification number on humans for medical purposes. Now, this is the softening up part of the whole story. Then you go through high-risk patients and so on. They're really worried about patients as they want to kill us off, right? And they're cutting medical staff and hospitals back across the board, across the planet. So they really care about our health. And I'll go into this right after these messages. Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix. And I'm reading an article here to do with, it's a predictive programming article to do with what's coming with the brain chip, really. Because after softening us up with, well, after all, they use it on animals, and after all, they're using it on Alzheimer's patients, and, well, after all, they're using it on prisoners with identity bracelets and so on. He says, Dr. Michael said the technology behind Uber Valence would eventually lead to a black box small enough to fit in a tiny microchip and implanted in our bodies. This could also allow someone to be located in an emergency or for the identification of corpses after a large-scale disaster or terrorist attack. So terrorism is going to cover everything. You understand, they can do anything they want to us under the guise of terrorism. This black box will then be a witness to our actual movements, words, perhaps even our thoughts, and play a similar role to the black box placed in an aircraft, he said. He also predicted that microchip implants and their infrastructure could eliminate the need for e-passports, e-tags, and security ID cards. Microchipping, I think, will eventually become compulsory in the context of identification within the framework of national security. Terrorism and national security. Well, we've got to get your chip. It won't hurt a bit, sir. Makes a little hammer and pops it in your head. And a little tube, bang, little pop. That's all there is to it, sir. You're one of ours now. She says, although Uber Valence was only in its early phases, which is a big joke, Dr. Michael's wife, Katina Michael, a senior lecturer from UOW School of Information Systems and Technology, said the ability to track and identify any individual was already possible. Well, of course it is. They were doing experiments with people back in the 60s, putting chips in them and tracking them through. They also found out they could put it in the spinal area. People end up in mental hospitals with this, hearing voices in their heads, feeling they were being controlled from somewhere else and locked up as schizophrenics. We live in a wonderful world of caring medical professionals, don't we? Anyone with a mobile phone can be tracked to 15 meters now, she said, pointing out that most mobile phone handsets now contain GPS receivers and radio frequency identification readers. She says, the worst scenario is the absolute loss of human rights, she said. Really, no kidding. I can see why she's a professor. Or she's a doctor. The worst scenario is the absolute loss of human rights. Well, that's no big deal, is it? How can you help but not lose your human rights? Do you think they're going to put something in you that you can control? Who's going to be controlling it? On whose behalf? And believe you me, if you dumb to your thoughts, which I'm sure they can do, and probably can do for a long time, they'll simply be calling you. In fact, they'll just motivate you to come in. You'll walk into the local police station, the nearest police station, your local one. You won't know why you're walking there. You've been made to walk there for a few adjustments. That's what's coming up. But as I say, this guy is just copying exactly what was out years ago in the movie called Final Cut by Robin Williams. That was the one that kicked off the predictive programming after they had the meeting at Loyola University and said they put it in movies and novels and so on. Everything's like this, predictive programming. Well, that's it for tonight from Ontario, Canada. From Hamish, myself, it's good night, and may your God or your gods go with you.